Struggling to stay up to date with social media? Do you want to get ahead online? You're in the right place. Welcome to the Public Sector Marketing Show, the podcast for public sector professionals who want to elevate their digital communications. Here's your host, Joanne Sweeney.
Hello and welcome to Season 6 and Episode 103 of the Public Sector Marketing Show. In today's show, I'm asking three workplace well-being questions. Firstly, are we better off at work now than before the pandemic? What is workplace well-being and how can we master it as leaders and as managers? I take a closer look at how workplaces are changing for the better and some of the innovative strategies that organisations are introducing and implementing on behalf of their teams. I interview Dolores Andrew, who recently held a national workplace wellbeing event. As a specialist in this field, she shares her tips, tricks and insights into how we can all be better managers and why we should embrace doing less. Let's dive in. In preparation for this episode, I got thinking about how our world of work has dramatically changed since the pandemic. We are remote working a lot more. We are traveling less, whether that's commuting for work or, in my case, traveling across the world on aeroplanes or across the country on trains. We are accessible around the clock, but maybe we're a bit more mindful about our mental health and well-being and that of our colleagues. But is our mental health, our well-being and our overall health better now in the remote working age? This is a question that I ask Dolores Andrew later, so stay tuned for that. But some other things are happening. Four-day working weeks are becoming more noticeable. One person on my team has had a four-day working week for a couple of years, and she's brilliant. She makes it a non-negotiable. It is my intention to get to a four-day working week by the end of 2024. And as a company, I'd like us in our entirety to be a four-day working week by the end of 2025. The right to switch off after hours is now law. So since the 1st of April 2021, there's a code of practice for employers and employees on the right to disconnect. Breastfeeding at work in Ireland, by law, you are entitled to breastfeeding breaks at work up until your child's second birthday. And I've now seen a lot of our connected and digital hubs across the country actually introducing dedicated feeding rooms for women, which is fantastic to see. And the next evolution of the workplace is neuro-inclusion. So Bank of Ireland, where I am, has become one of the first workplaces in the country to formally launch a neuro-inclusion strategy, which includes a suite of policies and processes and improvements to support neurodivergent colleagues and candidates. And in a recent Irish study conducted by Red Sea, 48% of neurodivergent people have not disclosed their condition in their workplace. So you can see that we are evolving for the better, but is our well-being and our mental health better than before the pandemic?
Public Sector Pros, do you want to progress in your career? Are you going for promotion? Do you want to stay ahead of the digital media landscape? We can help you. View our training calendar at publicsectormarketingpros.com.
So let's take a closer look at workplace well-being in practice before we speak to Dolores. So according to Healthy Ireland, workplace well-being programs contribute to a healthier workforce that can benefit employers by increasing employee productivity, increasing employee job satisfaction and loyalty, reducing absenteeism and presenteeism, reducing injuries and health and safety costs, and overall improving the organization's reputation and social responsibility efforts. They say that healthy workplaces also have the potential to reach employee families and communities and have further social implications, such as lowered burden on health services and insurance. So I decided to share with you some of our own workplace well-being practices, some good, some not so good, but it definitely is my ambition to improve them. So as I mentioned at the outset of this episode, I want all of us to go to a four-day working week. Many of us have children, have families, and that's important to us. Taking 4 to 6 weeks off holidays over the working year and making sure that we have those built into at least 2 week blocks. Having family or child days, having mental health days, obviously having sick days, and then having time off if we need it, if our pets get sick or they need us also. And then we're always trying to improve our conditions at work. So improving systems, processes, introducing new software and technology that can ease the burden of heavy admin or repeatable tasks, and then just generally helping each other out. So if we know that a team member is kind of getting backed up with their workload, then they know that they're free to ask somebody else to help or to give them some space to move it down the priority list. Healthy Ireland, I'd like to point out, have some fantastic case studies on their website around how organisations in public and in private sector are introducing workplace wellbeing programmes. So there's a number of them there that you can read. One in particular that stood out to me was from the Central Statistics Office. And management at the CSO decided to intentionally invest budget and resources into a workplace wellbeing programme. So that funding going to staff training. Staff had input into the overall programme and they were encouraged to facilitate along with line managers. But what were the outcomes and what was the impact of their workplace wellbeing programme? Well, they say that culture of health and wellbeing became embedded into the organisation, which is really important. Staff were given the opportunity to raise personal awareness and knowledge in health-related areas as part of their working environment. The reputation of the organisation as a positive working environment was increased, as well as the CSO being seen as an employer of choice. And then finally, staff were given the opportunity to manage the initiatives themselves and demonstrate their own leadership skills. So a really ground up and a cross organisation approach. So go to the Healthy Ireland website to read the case study, or I have it linked to the blog post associated with the podcast on our website. But if you've got any really fun, quirky or unique workplace wellbeing initiatives, I'd love to hear them. If you're on Instagram, send me a DM to @jsgramsdigital. I'm really delighted to have my good friend and well-known wellness professional, Dolores Andrew, join me on today's show. She's a workplace wellness trainer and holistic life coach. She is dedicated to enhancing the health and well-being of organizations and their employees. Dolores has 11 years coaching experience, and she delivers comprehensive wellness programs tailored to the unique needs of each workplace. Her expertise includes effective communication, stress management, developing both confidence and resilience, and empowering leaders and employees to achieve their best selves. Dolores is really a trusted advocate for workplace wellness, and her mission is to create healthier, happier, and more productive teams, one wellness initiative at the other. So let me put my workplace wellness questions to Dolores.
Dolores Andrew, thank you so much for joining me on the Public Sector Marketing Show.
Thank you for having me, Joanne. Delighted to be here.
So unusually, I'm not talking about marketing or comms or social media in this episode. And it's a bit of a sidestep for me to talk about well-being and workplace well-being. And let's face it, I don't know that much about it, but I know that you know everything about it. But before we get into the detail, let our listeners and our viewers know a little bit more about you and your work in this area.
Sure. Thanks, Joanne. Yeah. The reason I'm kind of niching down on workplace wellbeing at the moment is after I lost my legal career in 2008 with the recession, I was in conveyancing, and with the crash and everything, I refocused and I reinvented myself, and I went into the wellness. But I suppose pre-pandemic, even after the COVID, all of this really brought up so much, not alone for just myself, but I am so aware from the one-on-one clients that I was more concentrating on pre-going more into the workplace. I really feel that there's a need to do more around the whole workplace well-being, because we spend so much of our time at work. And I also have a background, and I shared my story recently around having had an issue in the workplace myself, which actually led me, this was my mid-30s, I was, you know, it's about 15 years ago now, but it was at a time too when I know what it's like to suffer in silence and to not feel seen and to be heard, which is a huge part of it. So I'm just really passionate now and following my passion of doing this piece in the workplace for that particular reason.
And so what does workplace well-being in practice mean to you?
Workplace well-being in practice is somewhere that we go to do our work, where we feel heard, seen, respected, and we actually know that we're making a difference, because generally we start working in an area we're in because we might apply for a job somewhere because we like the area and we like the people we work with and everything. But there's that piece around, if we're not feeling like we're being seen and heard, which, and these are fundamental needs we all have as individuals, they need to be met in order for us to be well, which is the huge part. So when we're working in an area or in a job where we feel seen and heard, and we can actually just know that if we have an issue, we can talk to someone, effective communication, we have someone championing us in the workplace. That's actually, for me, when we know that we're going to be more satisfied and we're going to be more engaged, because that's a huge thing at the moment, the whole employee engagement piece. With Gallup, who are world leaders in producing statistics around workplace well-being. Now, this obviously is a worldwide survey, but they quoted that 85% of people were not actively engaged in the workplace. 85%, that means that 15% are. So, you know, looking at this area, it's a huge number. And obviously, as I say, it won't be the same in every smaller company or even big, but it's not just something that we kind of look at as, oh, this fluffiness around workplace well-being. People need for these rights or these needs that they have, these fundamental needs that they have, they need to have them met in order to be actively engaged, in my opinion.
And what's interesting, Dolores, is when you hear this podcast in its entirety, when I was outlining workplace well-being and what does it mean in practice, I was actually talking about activities and programs, but you're dead right to go in with the, you know, do I feel heard? Do I feel seen? Do I feel valued? And do I have somebody in my corner that I can confide in? So I'm really glad that you've taken me back down to earth and reminded us that that's really what matters, because as you said, everything else can be fluff. But tell me now, like, so we're, gosh, how many years are we out of the pandemic? 4 since it started, 2 since we've really been out of it. And our whole working, our way of working has changed. More of us are working remotely. We're maybe doing less traveling, but we feel more accessible on the job all the time. How has that changed in terms of what people are looking for from you?
It's changed. I mean, it will be obviously personal, but it has changed the landscape, in my opinion, as well. I was working remotely, believe it or not, 15 years ago when I had my own issue in a workplace. And I think that was part of it. It was kind of like my machine in the office, they could see what I was doing. So it was a very, like, you know, they could see as I was typing along. So that in itself created some of the friction. And it's amazing. I actually just thought of that now, how it was probably a big part of it and how we can look at this whole hybrid work. And people, again, you know, really, is this rubbing up some people? Some people thrive working remotely. Personally, I do. I always have. I love working from home. I have no problem going into an office either. I love the connection we get in there. I like the hybrid. So personally, for someone like myself, it suits me. But it's not going to suit everybody. And I have heard, I go into companies doing workplace well-being, and I have heard that when people are given an option at these days, whether they want to turn up live or whether they want to go online, people that are suffering will go online and they'll turn off their cameras. So, you know, I think it's a broad issue, and it's something that's really a as a team, we look at as each individual organization can look at their team and see how it's differing for them, because it's going to be different. Some companies are really, really have it in hand. They've got it, you know, and it can be easier in a small company, possibly, or it can be easier in a big company when they have dedicated workplace wellbeing ambassadors, someone that's dedicated, a dedicated person where people know they can go to. So again, I think it's going back to this whole theme again of what your company or organization have in place. I think that can be the whole definition of whether it's working or not. So that may be a bit of a broad answer, but I do really think that when we have in workplaces dedicated ambassadors and systems in place and policies in place, that it's going to be easier for people to have that feeling seen and heard piece, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you note that the well-being of the remote working staff members who turn off their cameras, you know, maybe that's a first indicator, you know what I mean? So that well-being shows up in different ways and manifests itself in different ways. And because they're now not in the office and they're detached from their community, detached from human connection, that can actually be, you know, a catalyst for some people and then become a spiral. So you need a lot of communication, right, in these incidences, right?
An effective communication. So one of the things that, you know, you could look at really is different behavior from someone, a person that's at home turning off their camera. And also not to presume that wonderful word, you know, I presume they must be going through or they must be feeling anxious or because they're not turning on the camera. We need to have a conversation using effective communication to that person. They might come and say to you, actually, no, I didn't turn on my camera today because my son is homesick and he's three and he was sitting on my lap. So if we had presumed that person was having, you know, an issue with another employee, we start this whole narrative and we create something out of nothing. So we look at a problem, we may look at a behavior change in someone that usually maybe was quite buzzy and quite interactive, and we have a conversation, and one that's kind of, you know, not presuming, not put up the presumptuous things that we can do. And it's in our nature to feel concerned and to maybe to go off into our own little, you know, making up a story and go forward with that. What we want is we want open conversation. We want questions that are not leading. We want to understand the person. And I suppose effective communication really is about understanding what the person isn't saying as well. You know, maybe they don't want to tell you, the boss, that they turned off their camera because their child is off sick, because they may fear that there could be repercussions of that. Maybe they may fear that they'll be brought back into the workplace if it's felt that they're minding their child instead of working. Whilst that person might be the best worker you have on your team or in your organization, they may very well make up for it later. So again, it's very individual, and it's about that piece of looking for different behaviors that someone may be exhibiting and then having the dialogue, as you say, conscious connection. I talk about that a lot. You know, it's having we need connections, but we need to do it in a very conscious way, not coming from our own unconscious, our own biases. We may say, oh my goodness, mothers, you know, they're working at home, they're probably doing all this, if that's the, you know, a story we might make up, or fathers, we might have another story around that. So it's really to have a conscious connection with someone, open dialogue with them, find out really what is going on and get to the core of what they're not telling you, if they're not telling you.
One interesting development I came across recently was Bank of Ireland, and they launched a neuro inclusion strategy, and also on the back of some research from Red Sea, whereby 48% of people who were interviewed who are neurodivergent said that they haven't disclosed it in their work. So Bank of Ireland really being an early adopter in this space and actually developing a strategy around it. So this, you know, a new evolution, or, you know, a more open conversation that you think workplaces are having, or will need to have?
I think we'll need to have is more the honest truth, because, you know, the whole neurodivergent conversation is fairly new to some people. It's something I bring into my workplace wellbeing because I have personal experience of it and I have delved into it a lot. I'm not an expert, but I'm aware of the strengths that somebody with a neurodivergent brain rather than a neurotypical brain can bring to the table. So it's about fear when we don't know, and change. You know, if we change our structures, it always can bring up this whole fear issue. And it's about education, you know, because not everybody knows what neurodivergency is. And like the strengths that somebody with a neurodivergent brain, let's say, just for example, can be hyper-focused on something. And if with that hyper-focus comes a great strength, because if somebody with a neurodivergent brain is on your team, or you know they're on your office, you know that if you give them a task that they're interested in, which they have to be that focused, that they're going to do a phenomenal job, and maybe a job that nobody else on the team will be able to do as well. So when we break down the fear around speaking about it, and we share what it is with our team or what it is with our company, it'll open the doors, in my opinion, and hopefully for more people to come forward and say, you know, I think I might be that way. Because I did a 6-week course actually during the summer last year, because one of my sons was diagnosed with a neurodivergent brain. So I wanted to see, do I have it? You know, and because a lot of adults are also getting diagnosed as well. So ADHD Ireland run these programs. And it's very interesting understanding that, like, so many adults have undiagnosed neurodivergency as well. And it's not a weakness. It's nothing like that. It's just a different way of thinking. And that's actually huge. And I think it's a generational thing as well. You know, we have all these new people. Is it any coincidence that a lot of children are being diagnosed? Maybe we need these, you know, new generations coming in with their strengths and their ability to think outside the box, to bring that into a team, to help innovation, which is what we want, obviously. And, you know, and also to help them then, if we understand them and we listen to them, and that's important as well, actively listening. You know, what do we want as organisations? We want profitability, and we want our bottom line to grow. If we're open and we learn and we understand, it's a win-win for all of us, in my opinion. So well done to Bank of Ireland is all I can say, to be a leader in this, because there aren't a lot of companies, in my opinion, that I know of anyway, that are doing it.
Mm-hmm. And so when you're approached by a company to look at a workplace wellbeing program, apart from those practical, emotional, psychological supports, are there other kind of programs or activities that you would build around workplace wellbeing that you can share with us?
Yeah, so what I like to do is to do, with the company's permission, is to do a questionnaire beforehand, and to find out. And they don't have to give their emails. It's simple words.
Anonymous.
Thank you. So an anonymous questionnaire to really find out what the needs of the people are, because I can talk about a lot of different avenues in workplace wellbeing, but there's no point in me going in and talking about effective communication and teaching people how to actively listen and actively talk if there isn't an issue with communication in the workplace. Whilst instead it could be that they have a problem with something else, or an issue with something else. So it's very much about finding out the needs, and then developing a program around that. And, you know, I think really growth mindset and fixed mindset is a huge one I do, because a lot of companies have a lot of different generations working in them now. We can have 20-year-olds, we can have 30-year-olds, we can have 40-year-olds, we can have up to 70-year-olds. And we know that this can bring up, and I love these conversations, because I would be at the kind of, I would be over 50. So, you know, my generation and a bit older can sometimes clash with millennials, and they can see, look at us as very fixed. And sometimes the older age groups can look at the younger age groups and think they're very entitled. So that kind of a conversation can be really bridged. So I have been in places where there's, you know, I did some in the hospitality there recently, and it's like you could have a young receptionist and somebody older in a managerial position, and they have different expectations. And, you know, those expectations that team have, building something around that is important, because whilst somebody might know all about the mindset stuff, it doesn't mean that everybody does. So I work it and I weave it in a way that, you know, the younger person may need to understand more about the whole iceberg identity, which I do understand, and what motivates us, and, you know, self-awareness of that piece. but also bringing in then what somebody that's that knows that will need, which is a different expectation which they will have from the course. So it's possible to bring everybody along, and again, dropping my assumptions when I go in and presuming that this is what they need. We all need have different needs, but we all have fundamental needs. So it kind of comes back to the same thing about understanding. And I use Maslow's hierarchy of needs in lots of different ways, with whether I'm doing it with children or different age groups, because I think it's very simple. It's a very simple method of showing us that if this need isn't met, then we won't be able to, you know, if we're not feel like we're seen and heard, then we won't develop good self-esteem. We won't be confident, and that we need those in order to be reaching our full potential, which at the end of the day, I hope I didn't go off topic there. But yeah, I think it's about weaving really the needs of people and giving everybody a taste of this whole wellness piece and what we need to be engaged at work.
So really the point is that every workplace wellbeing program should be customized to the culture, to the people, to the challenges. So there really isn't a one size fits all approach.
No, there isn't. In my opinion, I don't believe there is, because not every company would have a culture that they know of. They don't have their values. They don't have their mission statement. And that can cause confusion in itself, because the culture is the invisible atmosphere. It's the known and expected behavior, whether it's said or not. And it's not said, you know, we know what we can get away with, or we know what we can't get away with, in simple terms. So the whole culture piece is huge for a company. So I would often deal with managers, and their issue may be the squeezed people in the middle between employees looking at them for guidelines, but then they have their own people above them that they have to bridge that gap. So, you know, and it's good to understand this piece actually, because even if there isn't a company culture, you can have a team culture. So you can be there. We can all as individuals create the change. Even if you're a team member, we can bring people along with us. So they are bespoke, in my opinion. And I think managers can have a great effect if they know how to say it, you know, and be that bridge in a way that's good for everybody. Again, bottom line of the company.
So tapping into your zone of genius, and for those who watch or who are listening, what three tips would you give us as individuals, employees, or in my case, business owner, to improve our own workplace wellbeing? What can we do that's within our own control?
Self-awareness for me is huge. You know, the more we look at ourselves and how we react, especially, you know, looking at our reactions is huge. Looking at the way we react to people, because that's an internal, that shows us what's motivating us, because all of our actions are motivated by the way we feel and our internal beliefs and our own values. So if we're finding that we, you know, we have these reactions that aren't getting us the desired result we want, really look at that piece. You know, and we can find simple ways of doing it. We can journal if people like that, write it down, you know, talk to somebody. So become self-aware, I think, is the biggest one for me. And that's why my work is a lot around the mindset piece, where we do go under the hood of our own mindset. I also think following our passion. Now, I know it's not always, we don't always find that through our work, and that's okay. But if we're a kind of a person that needs fun in our life, actually, there's a quote that wants to come out. It's like Wayne Dyer used to say, "Don't die with your song still inside you." So if you're not letting that song out, whether it be through, if you like dancing, do a Zumba class. If you can't do a Zumba class because you have small children, find one online, because that was one of mine. You know, if you have this passion and it's been suppressed in some way, we're not going to feel happy, because when we're working towards our passion, which I say is not always through our work we get it, and that's fine. You know, we might not be in our ideal job at the moment, but we look at where we are, and that's probably the third one. Look at where you are right now, and don't, you know, realize it for what it is. If it's not where you want to be the best you can be with where you are now, and find avenues to get those passions out, and to just be a bit more mindful, and to be realize that the present moment is the only time we can affect change. So come into that present moment and do something that's actually going to make a change to get you to where you want to be in the future.
I love those practical reminders. I mean, I very selfishly asked that question at the end because I know you give some great tips. But listen, before I let you go, where can people find out more about your work? Where can public sector agencies listening or watching to this, where can they get in touch and have a chat with you to maybe explore maybe some workplace wellbeing programs?
Sure. So my website, I rebranded in 2020, actually, in my own name, Dolores Andrews, and doloresandrew.com, basically. I'm very active on LinkedIn. And again, my name, people will find me there, and active on other platforms as well. But I suppose as with my workplace wellbeing, definitely LinkedIn is my platform. And I, you know, I do LinkedIn Lives a lot of weeks. I have a LinkedIn newsletter, Inside Workplace Wellbeing. I do interviews as well on that whole topic. So again, it's about connecting with other people in the space and learning, because we learn from each other, I think, as well. So I'm going off point as usual. You find me by my name, Dolores Andrew.
Dolores, a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for joining me on the Public Sector Marketing Show.
Joanne, thank you for having me. I've been listening to your podcast for a good many years now, and it's always a great one to listen to.
Thank you.
So that was a little bit of a different twist on a Public Sector Marketing Show podcast. But you know what? Behind all the work, we are just human beings wanting to improve ourselves and improve the lives of our colleagues or our clients, in my case. Stepping back into the core business of what I do, just a reminder that our 3 accredited courses are now on our website. So that's the Professional Diploma in Social Media, the Professional Diploma in Digital Communications, and the Professional Diploma in Digital Marketing, all available to take on demand. But you also get one-to-one coaching with me. And if you haven't already, please share the Public Sector Marketing Show with a colleague that you know. All our episodes you can watch, you can listen on our brand new website, publicsectormarketingpros.com. And a final plug, why not? It is my show after all. For my book, Public Sector Marketing Pro, this is the 2nd edition, available on Audible if you prefer to read, which I do, or available to buy in hard copy on Amazon. As always, I really appreciate your attention and your time and for sharing the show. I will see you on the next episode.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share with a public sector pro you know. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube. For more free resources, details of our upcoming training courses and consulting options, log on to publicsectormarketingpros.com.